This is Dylan FM, a Freak Music Club podcast. I'm Bob Dylan. If you love Dylan, you're in the right place. This season, we're going deep on Time Out of Mind to celebrate its 25th anniversary. Here's your host, Craig Danieloff.
Make You Feel My Love is a song that has received a lot of attention, but not for the reasons that Bob Dylan's songs are usually singled out. One is that it really caught the attention of other singers who covered it both prominently and frequently. Ray Padgett talked to us about that on an earlier episode.
The song at number one has 216 covers in this database. 26 for number two, 216 for number one. And as I'm sure most of you have figured out already, that number one song is Make You Feel My Love. Make You Feel My Love has been covered at this point by Boy George, by Neil Diamond, by Ed Sheeran, by Michael Bublé, Kelly Clarkson, Susan Boyle, the cast from Glee. And for God's sakes, it's been covered by Engelbert Humperdinck.
The song is also notable for the rare derision it inspires. It's the rare Bob Dylan song that a fair number of hardcore Dylan fans just don't like. Our guest today is Laura Tenchert, a writer, podcaster, and musician currently living in London, and someone willing to challenge and discuss the song and that often expressed, if not prevalent, feeling. Laura runs Definitely Dylan, which started as a radio show and now lives as a podcast and Patreon group. It's about art and creativity through the lens of Bob Dylan's work. She is a member of the board of the Institute of Bob Dylan Studies in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and is a frequent speaker at Dylan events. Today's podcast starts with Laura giving a talk to one of our members-only online events last year. Here, Laura digs into the issue around the controversy of this song and takes a deeper look at the song itself, what it might say and mean, and how these things interact with people's expectations and tastes. Here's Laura Tenchert talking about Make You Feel My Love.
I have a very interesting role here today because I'm going to talk about something that millions of people already know, and that is that Make You Feel My Love is a song worth paying attention to. As we all know, and Ray has spoken about this at the last session, Bob Dylan has always been covered throughout his entire career. In fact, his early success was based on covers by other mainstream artists like Peter, Paul, and Mary. And in the intervening years, from Jimi Hendrix to Guns N' Roses, his songs have often found more fame in other people's versions. But even in this context, and again, Ray talked about this in more depth, Make You Feel My Love is an outlier because of its crossover success as a mainstream pop song. And this wasn't due to Billy Joel nor Garth Brooks. And I would say that it wasn't even initially due to Adele. I think it happened more once the song made the jump to reality singing shows like The X Factor or Britain's Got Talent. And I think from that on, the song just took a life of its own. Of course, with performances on programs like these, you know, they're usually lacking nuance and they're usually more interested in acrobatics rather than artistry. And the song is often buried. And I think that the only song that we can possibly even compare it to would be Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, which has suffered a similar fate in that it's been sung by all sorts of people who you wouldn't expect to be covering a Leonard Cohen song. And there too, it was via a cover, right? Because there, I think it was because of Jeff Buckley and who made the song a lot more famous. And in the case of Make You Feel My Love, it was Adele. Either way, no matter which way you turn it, Make You Feel My Love is now part of Bob Dylan's legacy. And I think for that reason alone, it's worth taking a closer look. But the thing is, a lot of Dylan fans and a lot of Dylan critics hate this song. And I mean, they really hate it. And I think we should quickly figure out like why they hate it. So what are they saying about it? For example, the initial review of Time Out of Mind by Rolling Stone magazine said, only Make You Feel My Love, a spare ballad undermined by greeting card lyrics, breaks the album's spell. Clinton Halen seems that the less said about the song, the better. He says there's no depth to the song. Andrew Muir thinks that it's, quote, sad that the man who single-handedly turned popular music into something other than mindless platitudes about or banal complaints surrounding love was moving into his late 50s with an album drenched in the very sentiments he had once vanquished. And the silent implication is, of course, that Make You Feel My Love is the song that's most guilty of this. And Michael Gray calls it the album's low point and writes about the song's irredeemable awfulness, calling it Make You Feel My Love. And perhaps more scathingly, he says that it's a song, quote, unworthy of any place at all in Bob Dylan's repertoire. I mean, that's a pretty, you know, that's a pretty big accusation to say it's basically not even worthy of being called a Dylan song. And I think if I can make a guess here, I think that Make You Feel My Love is to many Dylan fans not what they want from a Bob Dylan song. That's kind of what I surmise from what I've seen fans say about it and from what these critics are saying as well. But this obviously begs the question, what is a Bob Dylan song? You know, what do we want from a Bob Dylan song? And the other day I was having an argument on Twitter with someone who said that he didn't care that Saved was a great gospel album because, in his opinion, it just wasn't a great Bob Dylan album. And I think that this goes, it speaks to a similar line of argument, right? Because the problem with this argument is that it kind of stems from this idea that we, as the audience, get to define who or what Bob Dylan is. And I've been thinking about that quite a bit in my work and in the things that I've been writing about lately, because I think that a lot of fans that grew up with Dylan, especially, I mean, not exclusively, but I think a lot of fans who grew up with Dylan come at any new work with a preformed idea of what they want from Bob Dylan, and they judge a new release by whether or not it lives up to their idea of Bob Dylan. Maybe it's because I'm a second or even third generation fan, depending on how you want to define it, and I've come to Dylan after he's already, you know, been born again, went electric, obviously, and has thrown a lot of other curveballs that I am less inclined to think in that way. And I think that a lot of fans who come at his work once a lot of, you know, a bit later in his career, they maybe are more likely to judge less likely to judge a release by who they think Bob Dylan should be, but rather they think about how the new work expands our idea of who Bob Dylan is. And I mean, again, I'm making generalizations here. I'm not saying that all fans, that all older or first generation fans are doing this. But in the case of Make You Feel My Love, if we take a look at the song a little bit more closely. So on the one hand, we have the music, and the music, as well as the lyrics to some extent, evoke the Great American Songbook. And this is interesting because back in 1997, when Time Out of Mind came out, this might have been rather random. But now looking back 25 years later, after Dylan has recorded Shadows in the Night, Fallen Angels, and Triplicate, this connection between Make You Feel My Love and the Great American Songbook seems to fall into place a bit more, and it almost seems like a kind of foreshadowing. And I think it's the classic nature of the music, along with the simple and very beautiful melody, that makes the song so easy to cover. But it might also be why some regard it as too slick or too sappy, and it generally that it doesn't sound like a Dylan song. But the main criticism across the board is based on the subject matter, on the one hand, that the song appears to be a very straightforward love song, which some say is unusual for Dylan. And on the other hand, that the lyrics are, in their eyes, simplistic and cliched, and once again, don't live up to some people's idea of what Bob Dylan lyrics sound like or to the standard that they expect from Bob Dylan. And we will get into the lyrics a bit more specifically in a moment, but the song's success is evidence that the lyrics do resonate with a lot of people, right? I mean, I think we can say that. But because the subject matter is love, you know, seemingly straightforward, very emotionally open, I believe that a lot of fans, and predominantly a lot of male fans, rejected. I have to say that these opinions leave an uncomfortable aftertaste for me, because they suggest that romantic songs, which are often aimed at and loved by women, are less serious or just plain worse because of their subject matter. And it's true that Bob Dylan initially set himself apart from other songwriters by writing these anti-love songs, anti-love songs like It Ain't Me, Babe, Don't Think Twice, It's All Right. But it's also not like he's never written other sincere and very simple professions of love before Make You Feel My Love. A source close to the Dylan camp, whatever that means, compared the song to Lay Lady Lay in its straightforward lyric and very singable melody. And I would also like to remind you of songs like If Not For You, where he sings, I'd be sad and blue if not for you. I mean, that's not really the height of poetry either, but it gets straight to the point, and that's what's more important, especially because these are songs and not poems. And while Bob Dylan has expanded the lyrics of popular songwriting, he's also always admired classic songwriters for their ability to communicate a feeling in songwriting concisely. He loves country music. He loves Hank Williams. And in those songs, the power comes from the fact that simple words are used to convey a complex but universally relatable emotion. Think of I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry. So let's think about the lyrics to Make You Feel My Love. Because on top of everything that I've just said, I don't actually believe that this is a straightforward love song. And I'm very surprised that it's been dismissed as such for such a long time. The song begins with the first verse. When the rain is blowing in your face and the whole world is on your case, I could offer you a warm embrace to make you feel my love. Some people take issue with these lines. I personally don't see anything wrong with them. But more importantly, this first verse really sets the tone for the song in several ways. For one, rain and wind are powerful themes throughout Dylan's work. I did a whole episode about the wind in Dylan's work a few years ago, which you can check out on my website. And wind in particular is often an externalization of confusion and psychological turmoil in Dylan's lyrics, while rain is often associated with its rhyme word pain. I think of pain pouring down. I will lay awake and listen to the sound of pain, right? So the opening lines, in a sense, function also like an inversion of the dynamic described in Shelter from the Storm. Only here, it's the singer offering shelter. And this first verse overall is innocuous enough. But there are already traces that things aren't quite as simple and straightforward as they might seem. The magic, or should I say tragic, word here is could. This is the word that tells us that this is anything but a sappy or sentimental love song. Think about the difference between when the rain is blowing in your face and the whole world is on your case, I will offer you a warm embrace, or I can offer you a warm embrace to make you feel my love. But that's not what he's singing. He's saying, I could offer you a warm embrace. And that word really makes all the difference. This is a song about unrequited love. And the more intense the singer's professions of his love get, the more tragic the song gets. As the song progresses, the singer's pleading is getting increasingly more desperate. So he begins by saying he could offer a warm embrace. In the next verse, that embrace turns into wanting to hold her a million years. You know, he's coming on very, very strongly. And the thing is, he technically knows this, because as soon as we get into the first B section, he sings, I know you haven't made your mind up yet. But the thing is that his knowledge of her indecision is immediately contrasted with the singer asserting that he has no doubt in my mind where you belong, right? So we have, I know you haven't made your mind up yet, no doubt in my mind where you belong. So we have this disconnect that's been hinted at in the could, in the first verse, in the second verse, throughout the song. And it's kind of confirmed in this B section. And the thing is, this pursuit of the singer, it almost gets a little bit creepy, especially in the next verse where he escalates again. I'd go hungry. I'd go black and blue. I'd go crawling down the avenue. And it's not that lines like these are necessarily out of place in a passionate love song, where you maybe sing about how your love has conquered all sorts of adversity. But what about as a love song to someone who hasn't made their mind up yet, right? If the person that the singer loves hasn't committed yet. And in this context, let's consider even the title of the song, which is also the refrain, Make You Feel My Love. The singer has love that he wants to give to his prospective partner. The singer is listing everything that he would do for his beloved. In other words, he is showing his love. He is trying to prove his love. And in both those things, the responsibility would rest solely on him. But that's not what the phrase is getting at. Make you feel my love. He wants the song's addressee to feel his love, which is sadly something that he has no control over. And the song that came to mind is I Can't Make You Love Me by Bonnie Raitt, where she sings, I can't make your heart feel something it won't. And this is the same dilemma that the singer is facing. The thing is that any romantic gesture or show of affection doesn't register as such if it comes from someone that you're not interested in. And this is really the crux. As I was thinking about the song, I was reminded of the Bob Dylan video to Duquesne Whistle. In the video, a young man is repeatedly trying to win over a girl that he has randomly taken a liking to after seeing her in the street. All his attempts at winning her over are straight out of the textbook of a classic rom-com. He steals her roses. He tries to get her attention by following her. But the result is not as he had planned. Rather, the woman perceives his constant pursuit as creepy and is increasingly freaked out, which is understandable if you watch the video, but he persists with pretty disastrous results. He is what we now would call a typical nice guy, but he too is determined to make the woman feel his, if not love, then at least infatuation. And that's to say, he too ends up black and blue crawling down the avenue. In both the video to Duquesne Whistle and Make You Feel My Love, there is a fundamental disconnect between the singer's feelings and the feelings of the person that he's singing to. So over the course of the song, the singer's examples of what he is willing to do get more and more extreme and more violent. In fact, in the mismatch of emotions between the singer and the addressee, the repeated phrase, to make you feel my love, can appear almost sinister, like a threat. And this is something that Grayley Heron has noted in his book on Time Out of Mind, Dreams and Dialogues, where he makes the case that Make You Feel My Love is one of several songs on Time Out of Mind in which Dylan blurs the line between the genre of love song and murder ballad. In the next B section, the rain of the opening line has turned into a raging storm. Has he been pushed too far, maybe like an idiot wind, where the situation turns into a raging storm? He sings, the storms are raging on the rolling sea and on the highway of regrets. The winds of change are blowing wild and free. You ain't seen nothing like me yet. And as Jochen has already noted, the phrase highway of regret is the title of a Stanley Brothers song, and the same song Dylan went back to a few times. He also took a line from it for Trying to Get to Heaven, and also took basically the chorus for Ain't Talkin' from it. But in the juxtaposition of the highway of regret and the winds of change, this section kind of echoes the indecision of the first B section. So the winds of change and regret. Could the singer be saying that if his love interest doesn't choose him, they will regret it? And with that in mind, you ain't seen nothing like me yet, again, sounds kind of like a threat. But then we come to the last verse, and the last verse is really the saddest. And the singer here sounds appropriately defeatist. I could make you happy, make your dreams come true, he sings. And what isn't said is the silent plea, if only you'd let me. In his desperate defeat, the singer even restates a line that he's already used early on in the song, saying that there's nothing that I wouldn't do. This line appears twice in the song. And Michael Gray has noted that he thinks that this is one reason why he doesn't like the song, and that this shows that Dylan ran out of ideas. Personally, I don't think that Bob Dylan would have any trouble finding another rhyme with "you." So I choose to believe that this is on purpose. I think that he is rather hammering home this point once more. And then he kind of, then he closes the song by saying that he would go to the ends of the earth for you. And I get the feeling that maybe at this point he already has an inkling that the only reason the object of his affection would like this, him going to the ends of the earth for you, is because that would take him far, far away from her. I have a few other notes on the recording of this, but I don't know if, I don't want to go too much over the time limit. So maybe we can leave it at that.
So the first part, I think, was why people don't like it, which is really interesting, because Dylan, generally, people are kind of accepting of almost anything he does. And I really think this is the peak of controversy, you know, where there are both, the there's some songs that are lesser liked universally, but there's few that some really like and some really hate. And I think that's where this one falls. And you offered a couple ideas about why, the simplicity, the banality, the music. And at the end, what do you think it is? What triggered this song to get so much passion?
I mean, that's a good question. And you'd probably have to ask the people who dislike it so strongly, of which I am not one. But I think that it's probably a combination of a few things. I think on the one hand, the context of the album Time Out of Mind could be one, because Time Out of Mind is largely a very lyrically dense album. It's a very dark album. It's very, it feels very comprehensive. It's one of these Dylan albums that clearly was written while he was in a particular state of mind, and all the songs kind of came out as part of this mindset. And I think on the surface, Make You Feel My Love doesn't seem to be a part of the album in that way, on the one hand, because I think some see the album as this very simple love song, and then also sonically, you know, because it's the only album, the only song on the album that has piano and otherwise very sparse accompaniment, whereas the rest of the album is very lush and has that Daniel Lenoir production. So I have the feeling that that could be something that already singles the song out and maybe primes people to think of it as apart from the other songs of the album in some way. And then also, I think, I think I am a big fan of looking at Dylan's work with, on the one hand, with the kind of historical reception of an album or a song in mind. So, you know, what were people saying when that album or song came out? And then how has our perception of, you know, that particular work, but also maybe of Dylan in general and of the time and so on, changed over the years? And I think with this song, we're really due for a reevaluation, because it seems like the Dylan critics that that felt quite negatively about the song have not really evolved in their opinions. They have stuck to this idea that it's a dreadful song, that it's a, you know, flat out bad song. And to me, there's just the nuance is lacking in that conversation. And it almost feels like those people made up their minds that it's a bad song and that it doesn't deserve a closer look. And they have stuck with us over the past 25 years. When I think that the story of the song alone, a song that went on to become probably the most well-known Dylan song of the last 30 years, if not of all time, I'm not sure. I don't have the stats or whatever, but it's a hugely famous song now. I think that in of itself should prompt us to take another look at this song and see how it fits in into the context of Dylan's, of the rest of Dylan's work, into the rest of Dylan's love songs, then also more recently, that now that he's done the American Songbook albums, I think this song particular is interesting as a kind of foreshadowing of his interest in those kinds of songs. Also, let's keep in mind that Time Out of Mind followed albums like Good As I've Been to You and World Gone Wrong. And Good As I've Been to You already had songs like Tomorrow Night. There's the outtake You Belong to Me, which I think is melodically quite similar to You Make You Feel My Love, as I think a couple of other people have also pointed out. So it's not like this is a song that stands in complete isolation in Dylan's work. And yeah, I think it's the reason why it's hated to me is often, I don't know, it almost feels like short-sightedness. And people just easily dismissing something that they don't perceive as having very much depth. Maybe also because they expect something more from Dylan in his 50s than they did from Dylan in his 20s and 30s. Because, I mean, as I mentioned in my talk, this is really not the only very simple love song that Dylan has ever written. But for some reason, people really love to hate the song. And I think it's time we take another look.
It's fascinating how many aspects of it there are. And you just mentioned maybe 10 of them. One thing I've been thinking about in preparing for this was the way it was treated live and the reception it got by Dylan fans live. It's not a song, you know, maybe for some people it's a, you know, bathroom and beer break song in the show. But generally, if you listen to the tapes and people's reaction, and I've been at dozens of concerts where it's been played, you don't get any difference. It doesn't broadly have that reaction there. It's also performed musically very differently, right? It's bass heavy. The piano's kind of gone. The drum's often more upfront. There's a lot of different things about it. I actually am in the category of haters who switched before this whole discussion, actually, but not that many years ago. And I think it's that initial reaction. It is this sort of palate cleanser on the album. Without inspection, it feels like a cheesy little nothing song. And then I think, as you point out, and others have, if you inspect a lot of it, the construction of it and the singing, if you don't decide to hate it on a binary switch, it's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. That's at least what happened for me.
I just wanted to add something as well. I think this idea that a lot of Dylan fans and a lot of Dylan critics hate the song, I think also might be amplified for those of us who are in this very nerdy Dylan bubble. You know, you would think that, I mean, you know, you ran that poll on Twitter, Will Make You Feel My Love came out as the least liked song on Time Out of Mind. And then we have people like Michael Gray and Clinton Halen and Andrew Muir and so on, you know, disparaging the song. But I think the more casual fans, of which there are, you know, so many more than us, you know, deep dive fans, I would assume that they all love the song. You know, people who, you know, go to a Dylan concert and just to have like a nice night out because they, you know, like maybe a few albums or whatever. And, you know, that's, I'm assuming the large majority of his concert goers, they will be excited to hear that song in concert. They probably haven't. And maybe this goes back to what I was saying about how certain...
They probably think he's doing a cover.
Maybe. But I think it also maybe goes back to what I was saying about that certain fans and I would say, you know, critics like Michael Gray and Clinton Halen have this idea of, you know, what a good Bob Dylan song is. And anything that kind of falls short of that to them, you know, is a disappointment or is a failure. And I think I would argue that most Dylan fans don't think like that. And they just enjoy the song. And so I think, you know, we also have to be a little bit, I don't know, aware of how those opinions might be amplified in you know, our circles. Whereas I think there are a lot of people who, I talked about this and they said, what, I didn't know that some people hate it, Make You Feel My Love. You know, so that's just that as an additional note to think about.
Well, there definitely are different approaches. And I think the professional critics, there's a class of people who bring, you know, a different sensibility, more of a literary analysis. And I think see and expose different things in all of the songs than others of us see and feel, just because I think they can sort of see more shades of gray and they're comparing it to on a different scale. I kind of put them in a slightly different category than the folks on Twitter who reacted quickly were all these sort of reactionary. As soon as you hear it, you immediately don't like it. There's the association with the other cover artists who are generally not the kind of artists that these people like. Although Jochen pointed out in his book, which I don't know if you've read that whole entry, but it has a bunch of interesting comments. And one is that a lot of people who covered it are pretty established songwriters who would know if they were covering a bad song. You know, the Neil Diamonds and the Prince, which was a cover I discovered.
I think that there is also something about that generation of Dylan critics and, you know, Michael Gray and Andrew Muir. And I mean, you know, I say this with all due respect because, you know, I grew up reading their Dylan criticism and I very much, you know, appreciate and admire the work that they've done and contributed. But I do think that when it comes to, I mean, if we just focus on, you know, what they've said about this song, you know, we don't have to like generalize it beyond that. But I thought it was a bit of a shame that some of these critics like just stopped at saying it is terrible because, you know, it's simple and it's banal. And therefore, you know, that's the end of the discussion. I would hope that maybe we can go beyond that a little bit. And even maybe some people don't like it, put that initial reaction aside and engage with it to see if maybe the song can win them over or not. You know, I'm not saying everyone needs to like the song. I think everyone's free to, you know, dislike whatever they want.
The idea that it's okay to dislike Dylan songs is almost a unique idea in the Dylan community. I think it is interesting for the sake of this kind of conversation to figure out why and then challenge it. And coming to it with a fresh mind, the idea of really looking at the music. And this is what Jochen does in his book. He has the same almost first reaction, but then kind of spends more time and says, wow, this music is actually, it's a good version of a style that you might not like. And Larry Starr, when I spoke to him, kind of made the same comment. He said, it's not one of my favorites, but it's a pretty well done version of that thing. The other thing I think of a lot, and I've been trying to find this quote, but Dylan a decade or so ago mentioned that he writes songs so that he has a certain style and theme that to fit in the live show. Meaning he doesn't want the same droning blues every time. And he mixed it up. Things like Cry a While and some of those things provided him a tool in the toolbox he could use in the mix of the show. And the palate cleansing role this plays on the album, which I think Clinton and others point to, they acknowledge it. But okay, so if he's got a good reason for a different kind of song, a different style and musical direction of song, then he's chosen to work in that box and see what he can do. And if you take all that into account, it becomes easier than saying, of all the things in the world Bob Dylan could do, why would he do this? Mm-hmm. He got to do all those things somewhere else. So maybe this is filling a role and you need to look at it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree.
The other thing about it, let's go into the lyrics a little bit because you went deep into the lyrics. One thing I looked at in this case was the Cold Iron's Bound lyrics mm-hmm. before and the Can't Wait lyrics after, trying to think about this arc and this time for palate cleansing, as I'm calling it. In Cold Iron Bounds, my love for her has taken such a long time to die. I'm 20 miles out of town. The walls are high and wide. It's a sad thing to feel your heart torn away or turn away. I'm never sure which word that really is. One look at you and I'm out of control. So but the thing's careening out of control. Mm-hmm. He sort of slows down in Make You Feel My Love and either makes a heartfelt or a creepy, we'll leave that fork in the road for a second, appeal. And then back on Can't Wait, he's waiting for you to change your mind. My heart can't go beating without you. I'm breathing hard. I can't wait. I don't know what I'd do. I might lose control. Mm-hmm. So thematically, it all fits. There's no shift at all. Mm-hmm. And this idea of a possible palate cleanse or just an emotional reflection. Okay, I'm just going to sit back and look at it this way. I actually don't tend to believe in this kind of overthinking of the albums. But from that point of view, it's perfectly logical place in the album.
Yeah, I think the palate cleansing is mostly musical to me. But I think what you point out, I think is dead on. There's an arc that continues through from Cold Iron's Bound, from someone who is, you know, desperate. And we see the same longing continuing in Make You Feel My Love. there it's different because I think it is disguised as this direct appeal that reads like a love song. But I think that was the case that I made, right? That, you know, that same desperation is very much in the lyrics. It's just a more tender appeal to the person to maybe change their mind. And that's then exactly followed by Can't Wait, where he says, can't wait for you to change your mind, you know? And maybe it's especially interesting, and maybe that's why Make You Feel My Love is an essential part of, you know, for example, that order of three songs, because it implies that this change of mind that the singer's waiting for in Can't Wait won't happen, you know? And I think we kind of notice that anyway in Can't Wait, that he sings, you know, I don't know how much longer I can wait, with the implication kind of being, you know, she probably won't change her mind. He probably will have to wait longer. And that's where the torture lies with the singer. And also, you know, it's, I don't know, there's this glimmer of hope there that, you know, a change of mind might still occur. And so he keeps waiting, but we don't know if there will ever be an end to the waiting in his favor.
And look, it starts at the beginning, right? The very last line of Lovesick after a whole song full of it's not going to happen is, but I want it to happen.
Yeah.
So let's go into the heart of the love song versus murder ballad. So you made the case, and Grayley has made the case, that there is a close reading that lives in the creepy world. One aspect of that I think I've never heard commented on is, right, Dylan, we all react to him on the phrasing, on the conveying meaning with his voice. Is there a sense of it anywhere there? In other words, I think it, you can make the close reading and it's a compelling case because those words have those stalkerish, overly aggressive meanings, but that's not the way he conveys it. And it's a fair reading to say, as you point out in your talk, these are metaphors used in love all the time. I don't know. I guess I'm just asking how you balance it out. Where do you think it lands and why?
Yeah, I think that's a really good and very important question. I think, so first of all, I don't think that I fall on either side of this discussion fully. I think that the point that I was making more is that there is some ambiguity in the lyrics, which I think is what makes the song more interesting to me. You know, that it's not a straightforward love song. And I think that ambiguity, whether you want to take that all the way to saying, well, actually, this is a murder ballad and so on. I think Grayley makes a very compelling case as part of his book that Make You Feel My Love is part of an album where there's a lot of this kind of ambiguity in a lot of the songs. When you see it in that context, I think there's a very interesting case to be made. And then we have, you know, later examples as well where Dylan kind of blurs the line a little bit. I mean, I think the obvious examples are always Moonlight from Love and Theft. I think Floater is another one. So, I mean, I think that same kind of ambiguity is present in some songs on on Love and Theft as well. And then, you know, most recently in To Be Alone With You in the rewrite that he debuted on Shadow Kingdom. And I can never say what Bob Dylan is thinking or what he is intending with his songs or with his art. But the feeling that I get is that he enjoys the ambiguity because in the end, you know, there is the two, love and murder, seem like complete opposites. But on the other hand, you know, Dylan comes from the folk tradition where these murder ballads are so often told as stories of, you know, love gone wrong, you know, not just the work gone wrong, but love gone wrong, you know, hey, hey, babe, I got blood in my eyes for you. And coming off of these albums, Good As I've Been to You and World Gone Wrong, we can see these themes continuing in Time Out of Mind. And I think as so often, Dylan goes back to the source of his inspiration for songwriting and for performing to then write something original again, come up with something new and kind of like take his own creativity someplace else. And I think Time Out of Mind is a great example with those two albums of traditional songs and folk songs that we can talk about, you know, Rough and Rowdy Ways coming on the heels of the Great American Songbook albums and so on. This idea of the murder ballad is, I think, I mean, it's obviously very interesting because it's just so, you know, subversive, the idea that, oh, maybe it's actually like a creepy stalker and it's not a lover at all. But at the same time, I think maybe we shouldn't get too carried away and say, oh, this is definitely what's going on. Because, I mean, that's certainly not what I would say. I think that there is a dark undercurrent running through a lot of Dylan's love songs that is, I mean, clearly pretty deliberate. But, I mean, even that darkness could be, you know, a kind of metaphor for, you know, a desperate lover, you know, for, you know, when everything looks so hopeless that you might as well, you know, resort to violence or whatever. You know, I think it doesn't necessarily have to be taken on a very literal level. So
right.
That's what I would say.
It may be an interesting spice he's putting in there because he does, as you say, enjoy the ambiguity or the multiple dimensions of it. I was thinking today about this. It'd be interesting to hear someone cover it with that intent, meaning try to put it across in the most aggressive way possible, because obviously, as all of our friends have discussed, the covers are as saccharine almost as you can possibly be. One interesting point about it that I hadn't noticed that Jochen points out in his book is that all the references in the language are negative. And it made me think of a, you know, maybe Bob challenging himself to kind of have a love song where you're describing love, but only talking about using kind of negative terms. This bad thing might happen. I'm going to prevent you from this. Mm-hmm. If you go back to the language, other than the actual love itself or some of the longing, it really is loaded with stuff. And these are, I believe these are the kind of things a songwriter would notice. And most of us wouldn't. I thought that was particularly interesting. He also points out that the girl presumably is never mentioned other than this conveyance about her feeling, mm-hmm. which is another unusual songwriting kind of accomplishment to get through the whole song and never refer to her in any specific
way. I think we get that a lot on Time Out of Mind. I think that's, I mean, now that you say that, I'm realizing that, you know, applies to Cold Irons Bound. Oh, that's a her, not a you, but Can't Wait, you know, Can't Wait for You to Change Your Mind. And so I think that's very true for a traditional love song, but in that case, I think it actually works really well in the context of the album.
So let's pull back out to the album for a minute. You at the beginning of this today talked about, or mentioned earlier, the idea of the generation of fans who's approaching it. I know you referenced yourself earlier as a third generation fan. Right? Someone now is going to have to draw the lines of when people came in. How do you think about Time Out of Mind broadly, and where does it sit for you? And does it have that kind of place, or is it kind of just another Dylan album?
I wasn't a fan yet when Time Out of Mind came out. I think because I came to Dylan's catalog kind of as a whole, I mean, I think that the first album that came out, like just when I was getting into Dylan, was Love and Theft, actually. So not too long after. But I think I remember that around the time when I was getting into Dylan his 60th birthday was being celebrated. That was like just around the time. And I started collecting, you know, all the, you know, magazine articles celebrating him and his work and so on. And that at the time, it really helped me make sense of his work thus far, I guess, because, you know, there were a lot of think pieces, lots of lists, you know, the 10 best albums. And I think because of that, and because I started reading about Dylan, I very quickly got an idea of which albums were celebrated, which albums were considered part of his greatest albums and which were considered weaker. You know, it doesn't take very much digging to figure out that people generally don't like the 80s albums, you know, and that the 90s were, you know, there wasn't much happening in the 90s. And then Time of Mind came out and it was a masterpiece. That was very much the narrative that I was aware of when I started listening to Time Out of Mind. I just remember listening to it and being immediately hooked because I thought it, I mean, I think I started listening to it like fairly early on because I had heard, I think, Not Dark Yet or something, and it became immediately one of my favorite Dylan songs. So I was really drawn to the sound. I was really drawn to I was really drawn to the voice. I was really drawn to the lyricism on the album. And that has really only deepened over the years, but it has deepened in the way I think that, you know, I've been thinking about this a bit. You know, Joni Mitchell appeared at the Newport Folk Festival the other week, and she was singing Both Sides Now. And, you know, the idea of singing Both Sides Now in your early 20s and then singing Both Sides Now in your late 70s, the difference in, you know, meaning that you bring to a song like that is just so different. And I think as a listener approaching Time Out of Mind when you're 16 or when you're in your 30s, you know, already makes a big difference. And I'm looking forward to figuring out what this album feels like, you know, when I'm in my 40s, 50s, 60s, however old I will get to be, you know. I think that's the thing about good art, you know, you grow alongside it and the art grows alongside you and kind of deepens in meaning.
Yeah, the idea that this was the first mature person's album, you know, that this was the first serious album made by someone coming from the perspective of his age, which many people have made, is interesting when you think of the perspective of the listener, which could be 30 or 40 years their junior. I thought, by the way, you started me thinking about your talk down at in Miami about the interaction between time and the shifting elements of time that you went through there.
I've actually, that talk is part of a larger essay that I've just written and submitted to a book that should be coming out next year, which is all about time in Dylan's most recent work. So in basically in his work since Rough and Rowdy Ways. So I'm kind of excited about that article or that essay, and I'm excited for people to read it.
You wrote this new piece for who and where is it coming out?
This Florida talk that I gave about Dylan's paintings and Shadow Kingdom and kind of time basically is part of a larger essay that I just submitted to a really interesting sounding book that's coming out, edited by Erin Callahan and Cord Carney, about Dylan's set lists, which is really, I mean, a topic that hasn't been explored that much yet. So this should be really interesting. For me, it was incredibly gratifying to work on this piece. And I think it's given me all sorts of ideas that I'm taking into basically everything that I work on Dylan now. That the scope was a little bit ambitious because it's basically about like Dylan's treatment of time in his work since Rough and Rowdy Ways. So with an emphasis on his most recent paintings, Shadow Kingdom, and then the set list of the Rough and Rowdy Ways tour.
Oh.
So
I think this was great. Thanks for exploring Make You Feel My Love even further. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening.